I'm Gail Straub, and you're listening to the first episode of the She Explores podcast. Like SheExplores.com, this podcast is for inquisitive, creative women in the outdoors, on the road, and besides. It's about seeing beauty in the world around us. I've been wanting to create a podcast for a while now. I love interacting with She Explores contributors online by reading their words and falling into their photographs. It's great following everyone on social media, but there's something about hearing a story directly from someone. There are so many women out there living creative, adventurous lives, and I want to talk to them and introduce them to you. So yeah, I've been thinking about this podcast for a while now, but I haven't done it. I've come up with lots of reasons not to. I don't know enough about audio. I don't know if I have the time. I wonder who, if anyone, will listen. I worry that I'm boring. If I'm honest, it really all boils down to fear. I'm afraid. Fear is such a powerful emotion. Sometimes it keeps us safe, but more often it keeps us from taking the risks that propel us forward. On the flip side, it can be a fantastic motivator. I never would have traveled the country in a Sprinter van if I hadn't been afraid. I never would do it. I wouldn't say that life is fear, but I would say that fear is a very big part of life. So I decided to dedicate the first two episodes to fear. I talked to some women who I find interesting, and I found out how fear has shaped their lives and their relationship with the outdoors and creativity. Here goes.
You know, and it's like, I don't know if I'll ever figure anything out. So maybe my whole life is playful experimentation.
That's Liz Song, founder of Snow Queen and Scout, a website whose tagline is Wilderness Backpacking Made Simple for Women Just Starting Out. It's a great resource if you've never been and you're afraid to try. I wanted to talk to Liz because, first and foremost, I love her attitude. Playful experimentation is a great way to take on life. I also wanted to know how she got into the outdoors and what drove her to start a website for beginner backpackers. I had a feeling that fear had something to do with it. Liz grew up in Los Angeles and didn't get out into the wilderness until she was a teenager. We talked over the phone about that experience and how our relationship with backpacking started.
After hiking Half Dome, which was up to that point like the hardest thing I had ever done physically, I remember afterwards, I just felt like such a sense of accomplishment and like, wow, like that sense of awe and wonder standing on top of Half Dome. And I remember this moment like feeling like it was so quiet up there. And I think that's probably when kind of my curiosity started getting piqued about the wilderness. And then immediately after that Half Dome experience, I went to Santa Cruz. I didn't even visit that campus before I said I'd go there. So I didn't know what I was signing up for, but UC Santa Cruz is super, it's just in the woods. You're surrounded by redwoods and like you can take trails to class and things like that. And all of that was really unfamiliar to me, coming from like suburban LA. And I had been curious about backpacking for a while. I mean, it really, like that curiosity was tickled in college. And then I was like too scared to go. I didn't know anybody. I didn't know how to. I didn't have any gear. I felt silly to ask the questions that I had because they felt so beginner. And then, yeah, and then I just didn't really have people in my life who I could ask.
So did you feel intimidated by the other students at your college that they were more knowledgeable than you about the outdoors?
Oh, yeah. They seemed so extreme. And I think I was probably a lot – I was a lot more shy in college and, like, very awkward. So I don't think I just didn't have the confidence.
So how were you able to overcome that fear?
Well, it took 10 years. I think 10 years of sort of observing and I think something inside of me kept building. And I think I did date this guy for a minute, literally, and he was like this avid outdoorsman, like Knowles instructor, blah blah blah. And I think talking to him and his network of friends and getting to know them a little bit sort of eased that sense of fear. So I think having those conversations was helpful. And then my mom started backpacking too before I did. And she would go on these trips and this and that. And I kind of felt like, oh, I mean, if my mom can do it. She was like in her 60s too.
That's awesome.
I think, yeah, actually, now that I say that out loud, she was an inspiration in all the little things that influenced me. She was one of those.
So it sounds like the people around you made a big difference in kind of clearing that hurdle and just trying it for the first time to see if it's something that you would like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think when people talk about it, like when they come back and share their stories of, and like the photos of their experience, it's incredibly inspiring, you know, just to like, whoa, wow, I've never seen anything like that.
Now Liz shares her own stories and tips in order to motivate others. Her Instagram is a curation of female backpackers in incredible landscapes, building relationships on and off the trail. Her website is full of practical advice for beginners. I asked Liz whether one reason she started Snow Queen and Scout was to mitigate some of the fear people feel when they start out backpacking. Here's what she said.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like being less scared. I think having a safe space where they won't feel judged by the questions that they have.
Mm-hmm.
And just feeling like, oh, I'm not alone in this. Or gosh, like there are other people who have the same questions as I do. And for folks who don't have that community of people they can ask, it's just like a safe space for that.
So how many years after backpacking for the first time did you start Snow Queen and Scout?
Well, the idea came to me May of 2013. I think it had been percolating for a little while, but then I was at this conference, the 99U conference in New York, and Joe Jebbia from Airbnb, one of the co-founders, he was giving this talk and he had us all do this little exercise where we had to draw out our dream. And I just drew out this little sketch of this website that helps women go backpacking and making, you know, I mean, it was an ugly sketch. I don't even know what I drew, but I remember like articulating it, you know, on a piece of paper and saying, I'm going to do this thing. And then a few months later, I quit my job. And then January 1st of 2014, Samuel and I went and started a sabbatical. And part of the goal that I had during that sabbatical was, gosh, like I'm going to do some user research and start the site. And it wasn't, I mean, I did a little bit, but really we just kind of putzed around and enjoyed Montana. And it wasn't until the end of 2014 where I just felt like the fire under my butt, like, oh my gosh, I'm going to really regret it if I don't launch something this year. So I started just cracking on it. And in 2015, I finally launched something, anything. I was just like, this is good enough. It doesn't even matter. I just need to put it out on the web. And since then, it's like, I feel like it's been evolving quite a bit, but it's still a work in progress. Huge work in progress.
So how do you think you would feel right now if you hadn't started it?
I think I would have, I mean, I definitely feel like it would have been a huge bummer. And I wouldn't be surprised if somebody else created something like just like it with the same kind of mission. And I say that because I'm sort of influenced by Elizabeth Gilbert's book, Big Magic, and where she talks about her story about having this very specific idea of a novel that she wanted to write, and then she never did. And then it turned out this other writer, she wrote a story that was almost identical to it, not knowing anything about Elizabeth Gilbert's story. And kind of Elizabeth Gilbert talks about how when there's an idea or like inspiration or something and it comes to you, if you don't act on it, then it might just like jump to somebody else. Like it wants to manifest and if you're not doing anything with that gift, then it's kind of going to move on. So I feel like if I bet somebody else would have created something like it, and then I would just be, oh, that could have been me, you know?
So what would have stopped you from doing it? I guess it's all hypothetical, but what stops people from doing what they feel compelled to do or to create?
You know, I don't know about other folks. I feel like for me, it's often the story in my head that, it's not going to be good enough, or somebody else could do it better than you, or it's not going to make an impact. Like, nobody's going to care. I mean, there's just a lot of negative self-talk that I feel like can just spin around in my head. And that causes me to, one, procrastinate, and then, two, sort of convince myself to not doing something and following through.
I know I say those things to myself. I have that little voice inside that tells me all of those you can't do this as well as you would like to, someone else could do it better, all the reasons not to do something. And it's so funny when I meet other women, and I would never wish that voice upon them. But yeah. I will do it to myself all the time.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about what you say to yourself versus what you would say to your friend, it, you know, it's like, it's amazing, like, how different that is sometimes. And sometimes I have to take that perspective of like, well, if this were your friend talking about this project, what would you say to them? And it's often a much kinder, much like more compassionate, generous voice. And I'm like, wow, I wish that were my sort of automatic response.
I agree. Completely agree. I've heard that statement more related to like body image for women. You know, that women are pretty self-deprecating related to, you know, certain body types, or, you know, always their own and not as much to other, about other women. But it's really interesting to hear that about a project as or creativity or like your work or your passion. It sucks.
It totally sucks. Yeah.
So Liz gave me a reminder to listen to my inner voice. It's easy to let days go by without checking in. It's easy to give into fear. It's great to have friends who remind you of your best self. Full disclosure, I edited Liz's interview down a bit, but I can't resist sharing this clip.
That was my crazy long-winded answer. Wow.
Well, it wasn't a straight path, which is okay. You can find Liz online and learn about backpacking at www.snowqueenandscout.com.
You never know if the direction that you choose to go in is the right one, and you just have to leap and go with what feels right.
This is Rachel Goldfarb, one half of the Idol Theory Bus duo. Rachel and her boyfriend James started living in their orange VW bus named Sunshine in 2012. If you're interested in life on the road, you'll probably recognize them. Rachel is often seen smiling in the photographs that color their Instagram feed, at peace with the landscape and their way of life. Rachel is a writer and a dreamer. I talked with her the day before they launched their Kickstarter for their first book, entitled Orange is Optimism. I wanted to talk with Rachel because crowdfunding is a brave endeavor. You put a lot on the line and it's out there for everyone to see. If it were me, I'd be really nervous. I started off by asking her how she was feeling.
I am a nervous wreck right now. Our Kickstarter is launching tomorrow, and I think that this is one of the hardest things I've ever done. I didn't expect it to be, you know, like, we put our work out there every day on social media and on the internet, but this just feels so different because it's something so big. It's the biggest project we've ever done, and it's something that people are going to hold for a long time, and we're just releasing that and saying, I did something this big seems so much more serious than just a blog post, or even we did a zine across last year, we've released two different zines, and those felt like, you know, smaller projects. They didn't take as long to create. So we really put our whole heart into this. So it feels like I'm releasing a whole different side of myself to the world.
So do you think it's the fear associated with sharing those parts of you and your work and how personal it is, or is it a fear of failure?
Both. It's definitely both. I feel like the stories that are going to be released in this book are a little bit more intimate and personal than what I'm comfortable sharing on social media. They have a lot more emotion to them, and I think that that's scary as an artist to take that leap to put more of myself into it. On social media, it definitely is my story and my perspective, but I haven't put a lot of very raw emotions in there, because I don't think that that's a to me, that's not really what social media is for. To me, I don't go on social media to hear super raw emotions. So I think that a book is a much more appropriate form to share those. So that's what is probably the main, I don't know, that's what I'm scared about.
So what do you think that social media is for?
To me, I think that we can go, I think that social media is great ongoing discussion, and it's a great way to pose ideas and start conversations, but I definitely feel like it's limited in how deep you can go. I think that once you start being too real on social media, people are a little bit scared, because they're going there to see one part of your life. I think that an account that, you know, this is just my opinion, but I think that to a lot of people, an account is one side of someone's life. You're getting just a window in, and once you start to make that window too big on social media, people are like, whoa, I don't know if that's why I'm here today. So I think it's great. I love social media, and I think that as an ongoing conversation, it's wonderful, but I also think that it's constrictive. And so doing a more long-form project as an artist is really exciting in that way.
So hopefully in reading the book, people get to know like another dimension of both you and James.
Yeah, that's the hope. And James will also be sharing some photography that's different than what we feel comfortable putting on Instagram. Because definitely it's not just writing. Your photos are definitely that way. People get used to seeing one type of photo, and you kind of have this little side of your artistic self. So James is really excited about showing a different side of his photography as well.
Yeah, I'll be excited to see that too. I love his photography. I love the use of color. And I can tell looking at the preview of the Kickstarter that I saw that theme isn't going to go away.
No, we love color so much. I mean, I appreciate definitely when people go for more desaturation and the blues, but we love Technicolor.
So what's your inner voice saying right now? Like, what do you think it's going to feel like when you push? I don't really know if there's like a button that you push to make it go live.
There is.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a button, and I've been staring at it all day. my inner voice right now is all over the place. I go from being really confident about the Kickstarter and really, you know, ready to go out there in that way. And then the next hour I'll be in a wreck and be like, this is all wrong. I don't know if my book went the right direction. I've had like a mental breakdown a couple of nights ago to James. I was like, I don't think that any of my chapters are actually where I want them to be. Maybe we're too early and I just need to work on them some more. And, you know, creativity is kind of like that. If you don't limit yourself, you can just expand and fill all space and keep revising. And you know, that's the hard part about self-editing, I think, is that you don't ever know when done is. To you, your work is never quite good enough to show.
That's true. and it's also full, I think creativity is really full of highs and lows. So what you're experiencing is like a bit of a microcosm of what artists experience all the time.
Totally. I totally agree with that. It is. So yeah, and maybe something about the Kickstarter is, yeah, it compresses that, but you're right. Artists are going through that kind of on a longer time frame all the time.
Yeah, and I think that from what I found, that something that people don't talk about that often is that all artists and, you know, artists of all kinds, including writers, I think of them as entrepreneurs, and entrepreneurs don't, they don't live on like a steady keel either. Like they're, one minute you think everything's going amazing and the next minute you want to file for bankruptcy. So like, I feel like, I don't know. I see the parallel with artists as well.
Oh, I like that a lot. I think that that's so true. But and everything's kind of interconnected. I'm sure you experience that all the time too, because it's not your art and then your business and then yourself. It's all of these three things are in one, and that's scary. It makes you really nervous about, you know, if your personal life isn't going well, then your work won't go well. And it just seems a little bit more intense when you're an artist.
So does it help to have a partner on this project?
Definitely. I think having a partner helps a lot. You have another mind there through every step of the way helping you. And I think that for me, I'm a rambler, and James definitely edits me down. And I help him expand on what he wants to say. So we do a good job balancing each other out. But yeah, I think that going at this alone, I have a lot of respect for artists who put themselves out there alone, because that must be hard. I would be a lot more nervous if I didn't have... James is very grounding, so I definitely feel grateful for that.
Well, that's one of the things I remember from your interview, and now I can't believe it's been like a year and a half since you answered those questions for me.
Wow, really?
It's got to have been. I mean, it was like 2014.
That's, yeah,
so.
That's true, huh?
But I remember you described him as, you know, the person kind of holding your string, like you're the balloon floating.
I'm like a balloon, yeah. Like, totally.
Keeping you tethered. And having met you both, I could definitely see that.
Yeah, it's good. It works out well. Oh, man.
When was the first time that you remember sharing your writing?
That's a really interesting question. When we first went on social media, so we went on the road in the end of 2012, we hit the road. And I was kind of, I didn't really want to put myself out there. James was the one who pushed going on social media and starting a blog. And I was like, no, this is, you know, this trip is for us. It's our trip. I think that I really wanted introspection and time to grow, you know, just alone. I really felt like I needed that. And so James did all of our social media stuff. And I wrote some things on the blog, but was always nervous to put myself out there. Because to me, my writing was always for me. I've always written since I was, you know, a little girl. I have a journal from every year of my life that I can go back to. But that was always something that I was too afraid to share. And then about a year ago, I really started, James was really, you know, he was reading all of the stuff I was writing. He was like, I think you need an outlet for this. Why don't you start posting on Instagram some of your writing? And I said, oh, okay, I guess. And so I started doing it, and I was so nervous about it. I was like, it would give me anxiety to put up posts, because I didn't want people on social media judging me, I guess is what it was. I was very self-conscious. And it's been so cool how receptive people have been. And now I don't get scared about sharing on social media. That's been a big journey for me. If you would have asked me 2 years ago if I was going to run a Kickstarter to write a book, I would have said absolutely not. So this has been, you know, it's been so good. And it's really only because people have encouraged me that I felt comfortable at all to do this. So I'm so grateful for having She Explores as an outlet has been great for me. It's been really cool that this is a whole community and we're all encouraging each other.
Yeah, I think it's really great that your writing has been so successful on Instagram, because it's such a visual platform. And I know a lot of people, I guess my tendency is to think that people scroll and look at photos and they don't always read captions. So you know that, one, your writing's really compelling because people started reading, and now they probably see Idle Theory Bus and they choose to read. Like, they know, okay, it's not just the really cute bus or James awesome photos, it's Rachel's words too.
Yeah, that has been cool. It's been, and that was something that's been kind of scary, is bringing a, you know, literary side to Instagram. It's not definitely, you're totally right, that's not what the platform is about. So it has been really interesting. I don't know if I am subverting that, but definitely on our account, people definitely go there to read because I know they comment back. So I'm like, okay, people are reading this. So it takes both. And in that way, you know, Instagram is really cool that it can support both James's and I's art in one place.
Rachel and I got to talking about the different social media platforms out there and the pros and cons of sharing writing and photography on them.
A lot of people are going on Snapchat, and that's kind of the beauty of that is how fleeting it is. And people do know, you know that people are only really going to read that piece or see, even with the photo, people are really only going to see that photo for about a 24-hour period. Even on Instagram, people don't usually scroll back that often to see older photos. So that is something that's pretty cool about social media is how in the moment it is and that it isn't, you don't think of it as being lasting. So as an artist, it's a really cool way to be able to try out your art. I guess you get to test ideas that work and don't with your followers, and they get to tell you whether they like it or not. And then you're like, oh, well, I'll keep expanding these ideas or not. Go, you know, they don't like those ideas, so I won't expand them. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, it's definitely not precise, which is nice, but that isn't nice as well if you're a photographer. It's a little less controlled, which is more organic, but I saw you guys on Stellar, which is very time consuming, but I could see you ultimately telling some beautiful stories on that platform.
Yeah, I love that Stellar is more of a long, it's more geared towards long form storytelling. And I really like it in that way. We've put a few posts on there and we might continue to share in that way because it's more like a blog post.
Yeah. 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 And it is really, I like how visual it is.
Me too. Yeah. It looks beautiful when you look through people's little, you know, collections, they're beautiful. So that might be a good outlet.
But a lot of people are going physical, so yeah, we'll see. I think it's just, it is crazy how fast everything changes.
I know. So,
like, the landscape will be completely different in 2 years.
I know, which is exciting, but also terrifying.
Yeah.
you never know if the direction that you choose to go in is the right one, and you just have to leap and go with what feels right.
Yeah, that's true. It can be hard to leap sometimes, but that's very true.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what this whole thing is about, is how scary it is to make a leap and take that next step. It is scary, but I mean, definitely things that are not scary are not worth doing. So if it scares you, you probably should do it. That's kind of been my motto in life, and it's always worked out pretty well.
Yeah, it keeps you moving. Like, I really do believe that everyone is always moving forward. But I mean, obviously you are on the little number line that's like life. But besides that, from like a growth perspective, I think people are the more you take risks, the more you grow.
Yeah. And then the easier it is to take more risks.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I think it's going to go well.
Thanks, Gail. I hope so. I don't think I'm going to sleep tonight. I've been trying to be positive and surround myself with people who say what you just said. So thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, it's been about a month since Rachel and I talked, and her Kickstarter has come and gone. She and James were looking to raise $12,000, and I'm happy to say that they ended up raising almost $40,000. That's 325% of their goal. It goes to show you what can happen when you take risks and put yourself out there. You can follow along with Rachel on their Instagram handle, @IdleTheoryBus, and read her pieces on SheExplores.com. She was one of our first Women on the Road interviews, and she's written about how to eat farm fresh on the road as well. She has a unique way of looking at the world, and I'm really grateful to have her as part of our community. Well, thank you so much for listening to the first episode of the She Explores podcast. I hope you learned something about fear and how to approach it and why it's necessary often in life. I know I did. The next episode features Julie Hotz, a talented photographer and videographer. Last summer, she bicycled from Los Angeles to Glacier National Park in Montana. From there, she backpacked the Pacific Northwest Trail all the way to the Pacific Ocean. We'll learn about how she felt when she left Los Angeles that first day and the fear she experienced when she returned thousands of miles later.
I did a lot of stealth camping and I would ride till dark. And so then I would have to deal with being nervous about, oh, am I going to find a place to camp? But, you know, the more you do that and the more I had to interact with this same type of fear over and over, the more comfortable I became with it. And, you know, to the point where when nobody's dying, you realize everything's going to be fine. As long as no one's dying, everything is fine.
Do you think that's one of the reasons that people gravitate towards through hiking and long bike trips like that?
Absolutely. I think people gravitate towards this type of journey because the smallest percentage is about the landscape and the scenery. Maybe when you're planning it or when you first hear about it, that's what it's all about. But then when you actually get out on the road or the trail or the climbing wall, whatever it is that you're doing, it's really about the internal struggles, seeing the generosity of other people, and having to, you know, be transformed in ways that you don't know about until you get there.
Big thank you to Liz and Rachel for their talking with me for this first episode. You can subscribe to the podcast via iTunes and find it on she-explorers.com. Music is by Jazar. And I just want to say thank you to everyone else for listening. Have fun out there. Bye.